It is my strongly held conviction that Christmas is for you. And I remember being a little bit dissatisfied with that as a visitor and sort of thinking, the question I had in my head was this: how can Christmas be for me when it's about someone else? How can Christmas be for me when it's about someone else? But as he started to... as he started to unpack this passage, I realised that actually what he was saying was true. And this may sound like a deviation, but the reason I'm telling you this is because as we look at this passage from Galatians 4, I think we see a lot of the reason why that his strongly held conviction is that Christmas is for us. In the first part of the passage, God says that he gave his son for us. And part of this pastor's talk was saying that in the act of God giving his son, he gave us the greatest Christmas present we could ever wish to receive. Why? He goes on in Galatians 4 to say that through the gift of Jesus, we receive freedom from slavery, adopts us into his family, and makes us an heir to his throne. Now, I haven't got very long to kind of delve into this, but there are a couple of things that I want to kind of pick out and focus on. The first of these things is that word adoption. I think this is a really important theme. We see it weaved into this passage twice, but we see it throughout the whole Bible. It's really weaved and plastered throughout the whole DNA of the whole Bible, this idea of Jesus coming so that through faith in him, we can find ourselves adopted into God's family. And I found, as I was looking at it, I found these notes in my study Bible, which I found quite helpful. It says this: adoption. Under Roman law, an adopted child was guaranteed all legal rights to his father's property, even if he was formerly a slave. He was not a second-class son. He was equal to all other sons, biological or adopted, into his father's family. It says, as adopted children of God, we share with Jesus all rights to God's resources. As God's heirs, we can claim what he has provided for us, our full identity in Christ. So where does this end up? Where does this idea of adoption, where does it lead? I think we find the answer to that in verse 6. The passage says, and because we are his children, God has sent the Spirit of his Son into our hearts, prompting us to call out, Abba, Father. Now, this is really important. Abba, Father is probably the key point in this whole passage. And if you've been around church before, you might have heard that term, Abba, Father, but you might not necessarily know what it means. Well, the English language has its limitations, but the translations that I found were that it would be something akin to the word daddy or dada, something along those lines. It's not just a term about fatherhood. It's a term about intimacy between the relationship between a father and their child. There are three points I think it's really important to understand from what I'm saying. Number one, Christmas is for us. Number two, God gave the most amazing present that we could ever have wished to receive from anyone. Not just his son, but because through his son, we have all these other attributes to who we are, our identity that God has given us in Christ. And point three, through the gift of his son Jesus, he offers a relationship with himself. Now, if you've been in and around church before, if you've got Christian friends who you've spoken to, and maybe you're in that situation I was, where I was exploring, you might have come across that language before. You might have heard Christians talking in terms of, yeah, actually, you know, I have a relationship with God, and God is a relational being. And you might think that that sounds a bit odd. You might think that sounds a bit weird. And you might be tempted to ask the question that I did. What kind of a relationship does God have with his followers? Is it the kind of relationship where, you know, God's kind of far away and you can know stuff about him, but you can't really know or be known by him? Is it the kind of relationship you see in more Eastern religions where God's kind of the master and you're more of a slave, and actually you can obey him, but you can't really love him? Or is it the kind of relationship where maybe you say and do the right things and you move a little bit closer to him, you move a little bit further up that scale of righteousness, but in the end he's still a little bit cheesed off with you for the way that you've lived and the things you've done? If you want to understand, and if you only remember one thing I said this morning, I'd like it to be this. If you want to understand the kind of a relationship that a Christian has with their God, you need to understand the term Abba's Father. Dada. That's the kind of a relationship that a Christian has with their God. It's intimacy within fatherhood. Now, I'm not a father. I don't particularly desire to be one anytime soon. I've got friends who are parents and they just have snot on them all the time. It's gross. So gross. So I'm not a father at the moment, but I am a son of a fantastic dad. A fantastic dad. And the one thing he's always taught me, the one thing he's always shown me, is that there is nothing I could say or do that would cause him to walk away from me or stop loving me. The reason that the Bible uses this kind of language to explain the love of God, this language of fatherhood, is that when fatherhood works properly, I'm aware that's not always the case, but when fatherhood works properly, it is the closest thing in our human experience to the unconditional love of God. That's the kind of a relationship that a Christian has with their God. So the question that I want to leave you with is this. Do you know God as Abba Father? Do you know God as Abba Father? And if you don't, do you want to? If the answer to that second question is yes, come to Jesus. I promise he won't turn you away.